As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer Show and our latest forensic look at the USMNT. Yes, we're about 6 weeks out from the United States convening for Copa America prep, so we've got the latest injury and fitness updates, a look at a few contract situations out there, and some catch-ups with some prominent Americans abroad. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, Richmond, Virginia's very own Taylor Rocco. Hello, Taylor.
Hello, Ryan Bailey. How excited are you for like an hour of USMNT chat? Very or extremely?
Very extremely.
There we go. That's what we're looking for. That's the enthusiasm we need delivered in a very serious radio broadcaster voice.
Taylor, we should address this at this point. You seem to paint me with an anti-USMNT slant. My objection apathetic. Is just to international soccer in general.
Apathetic USMNT slant. I've been in the room with you as Joe and I were chewing our nails and fretting about the result. And even Graham was sort of concerned about the U.S. And Ryan was, I don't know,
sipping
a latte,
coffee in
like,
the corner.
What are we doing? What are we doing? What's going on? Who's winning?
I'm just very chill. That's all it is.
Sure. I mean, that is actually true. You don't, like, I think even for England games, you don't get fully emotional. I think you get excited, certainly, but you're not one to, you know, throw things in disgust or anything like that. I don't think any of us are, and I think that's probably a good thing overall.
Yeah, I only get enraged in the Bojangles drive-through line when they don't have what I need. That's the only time to get lose my cool.
And when your favorite booth at Chili's is occupied, and
correct.
I feel like that's a real one.
They wouldn't do that.
There it is.
That's not a realistic one. Joining us also, Phoenix, Arizona's Joe Lowry. Joe Thursday Night Lowry, I should say. Hi, Joe.
I'm recording on a Thursday. Let's go. This is my day of the week. This is my kind of episode. Let's get it, fellas.
Let's do it. What Man City, as we record, playing on a Thursday, Joe? That makes you elite.
Yeah, I'll have the full coverage of that game up on the feed later on because that's my purview these days.
Wonderful stuff. Thursday Night Lowry with us in the Power Trio. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show if you'd like to support our show. We've got bonus content there, including bonus podcast episodes, videos on there, and access to our Discord where all the cool kids are hanging out. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show. Please and thank you very much. All right, Joe, we'll say we get into some USMNT chat. You here for it?
Here for it.
Let's do it. Should we start off with Serginho Dest?
Sorry
to go so to that point from the intro, but it's something we discussed on Weekend Review. Obviously, Dest picking up a serious knee injury training with PSV over the weekend. What do we know? What are our updates here?
Yeah, Serginho Dest going to be out for a long time. That's the updates as things stand now. I still haven't read or seen anything from Dest about this injury, but the reporting out there is that he could miss up to 9 months. He's almost certainly done for the calendar year. And of course, last time I checked my calendar, the Copa America is included in the 2024 calendar year. Serginho Dest then will not be playing for PSV this season, will not be suiting up for the U.S. this summer at the Copa America or for those good friendlies before the Copa America. There's another layer here that maybe we'll touch on at the end that I'm fascinated by, which is what happens with Dest at club level, because he's on loan with PSV right now, and this obviously complicates a lot of that stuff. But for the U.S. men's national team, this is a big blow. There's only so much talent in this pool right now. The talent is growing, but there's still only so much of it. And Dest is, I'll speak for myself, the only right back in the pool that I feel somewhat comfortable starting for the United States in big games. There are other options that we'll discuss. Taylor, for me, this is a really big blow and one of the larger blows, at least along the back line, that could happen for the U.S.
Yeah, and I think I would extend that to the entire starting 11. I think he's one. We saw this in the Nations League. Like, you struggle to replace him with what he brings to the attack, with the fluidity he brings to the attack, with the combination play that he can have with somebody like Tim Weah. You don't really have anybody who can deputize and do the same thing to the extent that we've talked about Tim Weah maybe having to be that fullback. So even
and
there,
we'll talk about it more later on.
Yeah, we will. Continue. So I think it is a really sizable blow, and it will require some recalculation from Greg Berhalter, I would assume. My guess would be that we end up getting a sort of hybrid approach where we have a USMNT 11 that can be more attacking and has a more attack-minded option at fullback, and then we have one that's maybe slightly more defensive if we're coming up against stronger opposition. But then you still run into those issues of how do you transition to attack effectively if you don't have a person who can kind of bridge that divide. So it's a really tricky one. It's really bad timing, and it's really bad timing for Serginho Dest, who is still on loan at PSV.
Yeah.
And so do they make that permanent with him now being out for 9 months? That feels less likely. So then is it a return to Barcelona, and what happens there? It's just really unfortunate for him, for the U.S., for U.S. fans, all around not great.
Yeah, it's just setting up for the ultimate Serginho Dest redemption story at Barcelona, his boyhood club. I think this is actually lining up perfectly, to be honest. Xavi's going to go, this new manager's going to come in, and he's going to fall in love with Serginho Dest. It's all going to work out. As far as the national team angle goes, Taylor, you mentioned there maybe the U.S. adopting an approach for some of the higher profile teams, right? We think about them matching up with Uruguay in the final match of the group stage, then maybe against Brazil or Colombia in the quarterfinals if the U.S. get through in that group with Panama, Bolivia, and Uruguay. And then maybe having an approach for some of the teams where you know you're going to dominate the ball. I'm not ruling that out. I'm skeptical that we'll see that, just because I don't really think we have so far for the U.S. And that's maybe in part because the U.S. still hasn't played a lot of good teams under Greg Berhalter. Shout out to the Nations League for that. Like, there are difficulties there. Still, to be honest, my most likely outcome, if I had to predict what Greg Berhalter is going to do, is that Joe Scally is now right back number one. And I, to be clear, I don't think that is the best option. It's certainly not my preferred option to try in those pre-Copa America friendlies. That would absolutely be moving Tim Weah back one line and seeing how he looks in a role that he has played before at club level, is essentially playing right now with Juventus, although there are differences between being a right wing back and a right back. That would be my preference. But Joe Scally and Serginho Dest are the only right backs who have started for the U.S. in A squad games over the last calendar year. Like, if Dest has been unavailable, it's been Joe Scally. Weah has never seen minutes there for the U.S. It hasn't been any of the other depth options. Brian Reynolds hasn't been in that role. Like, it seems to me that in Berhalter's mind, it is Serginho Dest, and if Dest isn't available, then it's Joe Scally. And I hope it's not that simple, because I'll do my quick thing on Scally. I said this after the Nations League. He has never been good for the U.S. He's been neutral, or he's struggled. And really, it's been more struggles than not recently. He's playing at a high level over in Germany with Mönchengladbach. He does some things well in that he is a defensively somewhat reliable option and tends to be more conservative, which gives you an extra number in the back at times. But he almost never jumps off the screen. And if he does jump off the screen, it's almost always because of a sloppy turnover or a slow defensive read. So I don't love the idea of Scally being in that role. I would much rather, and I said this earlier in the week, try Tim Weah in a spot that maybe actually lets you do some more interesting things in the attack without losing all that much on the defensive end.
I think everything you just said is fully accurate, Joe. I think the distinction I am drawing is one that perhaps is only important to me. Like, maybe Greg Berhalter isn't as concerned about this. I think it's just everything you said about Scally is accurate. So then it's trying to kind of like force him into a Serginho-shaped like hole is basically square peg in a round hole. You don't want to like be hammering Joe Scally into that versus maybe accepting the limitations, letting him do things that are potentially more comfortable for him, though. You were correct then in saying that even sometimes there, he doesn't look fully comfortable. But I think it is maybe a distinction only to me. So then if you're not going to have it be like two different sort of setups, I am fully fine with it being Tim Weah, and we see how that goes. I do keep seeing it listed as like Weah could be an effective wingback. And in my mind, wingback implies back three. I don't think we're going to do anything like that. So it would be Tim Weah playing as a very attacking fullback. Maybe that's where you ask one of your midfielders to slide over and do more cover the Paul Pogba for Deschamps in France role, which makes Didier Deschamps the best manager in the world. There you go, Joe. That's right. For you.
I might cry. That's, it wasn't the death thing. It was that. That's going to do it.
Maybe that's a way you could sort of get around that, still have the kind of attacking output you need from that position, but have a little bit of cover behind.
Can I, Taylor, suggest a silver lining from this situation? The fullback's role primarily is defense. So in the Copa America, when you're coming against, coming up against sort of heavyweight South American teams, is there an opportunity to have a more defensively minded setup now, which might actually help with Fortitude in the long run?
I mean, theoretically, but I think that would go against what Berhalter has been trying to build. Joe may disagree on that one, but to me, I can see maybe adjusting certain positions and what you're asking of those positions, adjusting the overall approach. That seems less likely to me. We might still see them sit deeper and be more defensive and be more compact and be content to play on the break. I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing. And I think that's where the U.S. oftentimes can look really effective with some of the attackers they have and some of the attacking speed they have. But I think kind of moving away from the game plan that's been building, at least in my mind, becomes an immediate point of criticism, point of contention, point of why have they changed everything ahead of this tournament? And if that tournament goes poorly, I think it just adds on that pressure a little bit. But Joe, maybe that's a distinction only I am drawing once again.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think we've seen Greg Berhalter pretty clearly shift from, hey, we want to build out of the back at all costs, we want to get really good at this, to, hey, when we play a team that's better than us on paper, or at least like even equal to us, we're going to make this into an absolute like lighter can flight in the middle of the field. We see it against Mexico basically every single time out. We saw it against Germany, where there was some nice attacking play from the U.S. Those things aren't mutually exclusive. But when they lost the ball, the U.S. did a bit of pressing, but they also did a bit of lower block defending. So I don't think it is out of the realm of possibility whatsoever that against some of the big teams in this competition, the U.S. set up in a 4-3-3 mid-block. They drop into a lower block at times. They step high to press at times. They go more direct in transition. I think Berhalter kind of gave up on that build out of the back stuff years ago at this point. Not that they'll never do it, but I don't think going with a more defensive option is at all out of the realm of possibility. My problem with all this, and why I would lean Wea, to be clear, to try in those friendlies before the Copa America, if it doesn't work, then you go back to the more obvious plan of giving Joe Scally or someone else minutes in that right back spot. The reason why I lean towards trying Wea is Dest is not a good defensive fullback. Scally, I think, is a little bit better at some of that stuff. I don't think he is miles better. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, if you're going to sacrifice something on the defensive end, and you were already sacrificing something on the defensive end with Sergiño Dest, maybe this is an opportunity to try and at least maintain or get as close to maintaining what you had in the attack with Dest by moving someone like Wea downfield. So I don't know if this is going to work with Tim Wea. I'm just fascinated to try it, right? He's an incredibly versatile player. He's done the job for Lille. He's doing something similar with Juventus. It feels like this is a good moment to try and get a solid collection of your almost best 11 players on the field together and do it in a way that doesn't completely compromise some things that you've already built.
But when you say they've moved away fully from the build out of the back, like, you're not then saying that they're just going to hoof it long and be hopeful on the counter, correct?
No, I mean, not entirely, right? None of these things are mutually exclusive. But if you go back and watch that Nations League final against Mexico, the U.S. weren't trying to build out of the back. They were playing long balls over the top. I don't remember what the passing accuracy percentage was, but that's usually a pretty good indicator of how teams are trying to approach games in possession. And it was, I think, in the 60s or something along those lines, which is super, super low. The U.S. are very happy these days to go direct against teams that will let them go direct and play into the depth for Tim Wea or Christian Pulisic. Or if Wea moves back, maybe it's Haji Wright who gets inserted into that front line. I think that's a really curious discussion about, okay, if Wea does move back, which is, again, all hypothetical at this point, who replaces him in the front line? Is it Reyna and you rock with the MMA midfield? Is Reyna still in central midfield, which would probably be my preference against some teams at least, and you do put Wright or Aaronson into the front line? There are still lots of questions here. But yeah, the U.S. is absolutely not above going direct at this point.
Oh boy, I don't love that. One other question. We're obviously going very long on this one. Joe, there are times that we talk about the U.S. so much, people analyze the U.S. so much, that maybe we get into like hypothetical, theoretical things that could happen but aren't very likely to happen. Wea at fullback does not feel like one of those to me. And I think that's kind of where I'm going with this. Do you feel like this is something that U.S. soccer Twitter and Reddit and whatever are going to be really obsessively focused on, but that Berhalter fundamentally is just going to play Scally and whatever other fullbacks he has at his disposal? Or do you feel like this is a thing where we could see genuine experimentation?
My gut says 75% Scally and 25%. Maybe 75% Scally, 5% someone else, and 20% Tim Weah maybe getting a look there. It feels unlikely to me because I don't know. Maybe we would have seen it at least in a glimpse when Dest has missed games because he has missed games. He punted the ball out of Trinidad and Tobago back in November and missed a game as a result of that. We just talked about that in the Nations League. He's missed time in other points with injuries and things like that. He's missed time with red cards as well. Like, there have been opportunities to give it a look, and we've never seen it, and I don't know if we're going to, but I don't think it's impossible, Taylor. I don't think it's impossible.
I think it would basically just be a sign that Scally hasn't met the expectations,
and it
requires additional looks. But I do think the question then is that where Berhalter is on Scally? Is he willing to say, this likely isn't my guy, who else might be able to do it? Or is he willing to persist and see if Scally can rise to the occasion? So that's a really interesting thing to keep an eye on as we build towards the Copa America. And an eventual U.S. win, obviously. They're going to win the whole thing. Regardless of who's there, I don't love the starting right wingers. If Tim Weah is playing it right back, I'm scared now, Joe.
It's bleak. Yeah, it's bleak.
I like your positivity there, Taylor, and your thoughts on the destiny of this team.
Boo! Ryan, you had 10 minutes to cook that up, and that's what you brought? Oh, it hurts.
Yeah, I'm still proud of it.
I liked it.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Weston McKennie's contract, some injury updates from around Europe, and much more back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Gents, let's turn our attention to Weston McKennie, whose contract at Juventus is up next summer. We are hearing, Joe, from Calciomercato and various other Italian sources that McKennie has turned down Juventus' latest contract extension offer due to no increase in his salary. Come on, Juventus. Seriously?
I mean, come on. Ryan, can you confirm this? You're the only Italian source that I trust, truly. Yes? Yeah, I can see it in Ryan's eyes. He's confirmed.
Sure.
McKennie is sort of in the middle of a long history of Juventus not caring about him whatsoever. Like, so he was on loan at Leeds and comes back to Juventus over the offseason, and they had removed his locker, like they'd given it to someone else, and his parking space. And suddenly he's back with Juventus, and he is actually changing games for them and has been his usual Weston McKennie self. And I think, understandably, kind of wants a pay raise. This has been his best season in Italy, and Juventus don't seem terribly inclined to make that happen. To me, not a lot has changed in this whole situation. I recognize that there is obviously a change in terms of the contract negotiations and that they're happening, but his contract, as far as I could find, expires after next season. So this is maybe not entirely pressing for the next campaign over in Italy. Juve have never seemed to love Weston McKennie. That still seems to be true now. He's still starting for them and playing important minutes.
It was the ranch and pizza comment, wasn't it? That's what did it.
Maybe that's what it is. They're like, dude, this guy's a PR nightmare for us. We got to get him out of here. The Italians hate him. I don't know what it is, right? But they don't seem to have ever really committed to having Weston McKennie be involved in their team. And to an extent, I get that, right? Because he is such a valuable rotation player and that he can do a lot of things at a good level. But Juventus, and at least maybe this is just contract posturing and they're going to change their stance, Juventus at least seem in line with how they've always sort of treated Weston McKennie. And what that means for McKennie's career, whether he's going to be at Juve or elsewhere next year, it's a little too early to tell.
A couple things there. So Joe is correct. He's got the year left. But I think the issue then becomes if you're Juve and he's not going to agree. Yeah, you have the 1 year remaining, so you can still get some money if you want to try to sell him, versus next January he could then sign on a free for somebody else. So that kind of becomes the question at the impasse. And I think Juve's financials maybe are going to limit what they're able to offer. It does seem like for McKennie, with the way things have gone at Juve and how up and down they've been, Joe outlined that really well. I think it is I'd like to see you all put up or shut up and be a little bit more willing to kind of back me and say that I am a critical player for you all, as opposed to a player whose parking spot you can offload really quickly. This feels like one of those confusing Serie A moves where situations in which we've seen players move from big club to big club. And there are other clubs in Serie A that I think could use someone like Weston McKennie to elevate them and push them to that next level. So I think there will be interest. I would like to see him stay in Italy if at all possible. I wouldn't hate if it was with Juve, but I think a lot of that comes down to his willingness to work with them and what he exactly is wanting and what sort of backing he is looking for. And then also who the next manager is going to be, because that is a concern for him. That's a concern for Timothy Weah as well. If it's Thiago Motta coming in, how does he want to use both of them? I guess McKennie is less concerned about Tim Weah's usage when it comes to McKennie's contract. But I think there's enough uncertainty there that I think I understand why McKennie is looking for a little more backing from the club.
Do we think, Taylor, Juventus are waiting to see if Nottingham Forest stay up and if they'll offer silly money for him in the summer? That feels like a path for me.
Yeah, apparently he's had rumored interest or maybe a few conversations with Major League Soccer in Saudi Arabia. That feels like those sides have reached out to him to offer some lucrative deals. And I do think he could make some money in Major League Soccer. I think he would be a draw. I think he would be somebody that people pay money to go see and want to support. And so in that way, it would make sense. Similar to Josie and Michael Bradley coming back to Major League Soccer. It's not a move I would want for Weston McKennie, because I feel like he can continue to push on and continue to develop, ideally. So I would like to see him stay in Europe, as I said, in Serie A, and ideally with one of the teams involved in the Champions League, ideally.
Yeah. I think we're still one contract too early for McKennie coming back. I don't think that would be a good move for his career, so I'm right with you on that one, Taylor. My guess, if I had to make a prediction on all this, is that Juve will either agree to a deal with McKennie, or they'll just sort of play it out and he's going to end up sticking around at least for a little while longer. But a lot of this probably does depend, and you mentioned it, on Thiago Motta. If that ends up coming over the line, and how Motta feels about McKennie. Let's be honest, McKennie is not exactly your typical possession player, in that he can do a lot of fun things on the ball, but consistency is not one of his best qualities. And Thiago Motta has played a possession game with Bologna. They want to control the ball. Juve have not really done that against great teams under Max Allegri. So it's going to be a stylistic shift if that gets over the line. And Motta's maybe early impressions of McKennie could have a really, really big impact on where he's playing soccer next year.
Can you imagine if they gave Motta McKennie's parking spot?
Oh,
summer. How aggressive would that be?
That hurts.
Does Allegri get to keep his?
Yeah, he gets two. Just for prosperity. All right, let's jump back to PSV, shall we? Ricardo Pepi, it seems, Joe, a little unhappy, should we say.
Yeah, Ricardo Pepi out there doing some talking, and his agent out there doing some talking as well. Jaime Garcia is Ricardo Pepi's agent. Yeah, this we never see this. To an extent, I get a lot of this, and I thought they handled this in a pretty good way. This is in an interview, and Garcia very much made sure to give credit to Luke de Jong in his comments. I don't think these came off inflammatory really at all. I don't feel like PSV could be particularly aggrieved by these comments, but the quote from the agent, he talked about Ricardo basically should be playing more than 10% of the total minutes for PSV, which is about right. And this quote is from Garcia: if you play so little, you can also lose your place in the national team. With the Copa America this year and the World Cup in 2 years' time in your own country, there are two great tournaments coming up. Ricardo wants and needs to be there. That's why it can't continue like this. And the insinuation is, well, maybe we will push for a move or something along those lines. But again, a lot of this is understandable. I think PSV probably imagined a slightly larger place for Ricardo Pepi in the team this year. And then Luke de Jong has been scoring goal after goal after goal. And if it ain't broke in terms of PSV collecting points left and right, you don't need to fix it. I have no ill will towards PSV whatsoever. I would do the exact same thing. It's obviously not an ideal situation for Ricardo Pepi, who continues to do his 10 minutes off the bench here, 8 minutes off the bench there, 15 minutes off the bench over there. It's not been a good year for Ricardo Pepi in his development as far as it relates to actually being on the field and being allowed to grow as a young player.
I think his agent also did a really good job outlining some of the numbers to make it clear. a goal every 66 minutes. He's very efficient. He could be playing. He's only started two matches. That's on them. And Joe, as you said, he also did a really good job of giving you the clickbait headline of like Pepe frustrated by lack of minutes. Like maybe we're going to just look around and see. But then within the actual context of the interview does sort of cover the bases, does explain how they understand the situation. They understand how Luke de Jong has earned his spot and how even there's a good relationship between the two, but that it's still not an ideal situation. It feels to me like they're just trying to keep the fire lit and make sure that there is still an enthusiasm and interest in Ricardo Pepi playing and being part of PSV. Peter Bosch was asked about it as well. He said, I understand the situation. He has the captain in front of him who is having a great season, scoring a lot and providing a lot of assists. I've noticed lately that he's starting to find it difficult. He trains very well and takes huge steps. In positional games, you see that he's becoming increasingly ball resistant. I don't quite know what that means. And then he has to start on the bench every time. That's difficult. And so I think there is there, again, a willingness from the part of PSV to basically say, like, we get where you're coming from. We understand the situation. At the same time, we're not going to bench our captain who scored 33 goals this season. So it's just a really tricky situation. And I think it's one of those things that is probably just part of being a professional footballer is finding yourself in a situation that isn't ideal, but is also understandable. And then trying to navigate that in the best possible way, short of PSV changing their approach or somebody coming in with a big offer for Luke de Jong. I'm not quite sure how this ends up playing out.
Taylor, looking ahead to the summer a little bit, I think it's interesting that Garcia mentions the Copa America. That makes sense. Where do you have Pepe? As you think about this squad for the U.S., where do you, not Greg Berhalter, but where would you send Ricardo Pepe? Because you have the Copa America, and then very quickly after that, you have the Olympics. I think we're both still thinking that there's not going to be a ton of double dipping from one of these tournament rosters to the other, although that it's possible. Which tournament would you send Pepe to? I'm assuming you're sending him to at least one.
I would send him to the Copa, I think. And
okay, well, now you got to do the whole striker squad. So all right, who are your Copa America strikers?
I mean, it's still Balogun for me. It's still Pepe for me. And then there's a little bit of a question mark. I think, Joe, you laid it out earlier that if you are going to experiment with Tim Weah as your right back, that opens up that space on the right wing. Ryan is rubbing his forehead. He is loving this. And so then maybe it is Haji Wright who could be a striker but could also play out wide. So he could be involved. Josh Sargent, we've talked about a little bit, maybe not as much as some people would like. Maybe he is still involved in that conversation too. But I think you've asked me not to include what Berhalter thinks or what he might do. It's hard for me to remove that just because I look at this as I think he's a very good striker, Pepe. I think he can be an impact sub. I think there is also value in making sure that PSV know here's a guy who is included in our main squad. You have a U.S. international on your books who is going to be playing in a major tournament for us. And I think in that way, you're putting him in the shop window a little bit and also just keeping him very much present with the national team, but also in terms of the planning for PSV. If he's with the Olympic team, that maybe looks a little bit more developmental, even if he is being utilized as a senior figure or a leadership figure in that team. It maybe doesn't carry that same weight. And I do think that is, again, part of international management and international soccer is sort of making sure that your players feel valued, feel protected, feel included. And that is something that Pepe has talked about not feeling in the past. So I think for Berhalter, it probably makes a good amount of sense to bring him in. And if he doesn't, I do also think we can read into that.
Taylor, I'm still stuck on ball resistance.
Me too.
That quote you read earlier. Would you just read that line one more time, please?
In positional games, you can see that he is becoming increasingly ball resistant. Joe, is he saying press resistant, or is he running away from the ball?
So sorry, was that a manager quote or an agent quote?
I believe that was Peter Bosch who said that.
Ball resistant sounds like I don't want the ball, and Pepe, to be honest, doesn't really want the ball at his feet. So maybe is that what he's talking about? I've never heard that term before in that way. I don't understand.
Doesn't seem like a good thing.
It does not seem like a good thing. That's my one takeaway.
Interesting. Okay. Well, maybe that's part of the problem. Let's talk about Tyler Adams, shall we? Let's get an update there. Ooh, no update. So out of the Bournemouth squad for the Wolves game on Wednesday of this week. Taylor, it felt like there was some talk that he might have even returned to the squad this past weekend. Mm. But no sign yet.
Nope, at least it's not a hamstring. That's good. It's back issues, which can be related to hamstring issues, which is less good. Joe, make it better. Make it all okay.
Yeah.
Make Tyler Adams play, please.
I can't make it better. Adams has continued to struggle with injuries. This has been the story with Tyler Adams throughout his entire European career, basically, whether it's been issues with playing time early on with Leipzig or then a bunch of injuries, and his injury page on Transfer Market is long. The guy's only played more than 2,000 minutes once since he moved to Europe 5 years ago. This is the constant problem. This is why I talked about prior to the World Cup last year, sorry, 2022, it feels like last year, prior to the World Cup in 2022, like the U.S. are probably going to be missing a player because Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Sergiño Dest, Christian Pulisic, others in the pool, Gio Reyna, like they're oftentimes not around. They're not healthy. They're not playing games. And fortunately for the U.S., they were almost there in 2022. And then you had all this stuff with Gio Reyna, and it didn't maybe seem like he was fully fit, but there were also clearly other issues going on there as well. And Adams, I don't know if you've heard, but the Berhalter family and the Reyna family are super tight still, Taylor. Oh, cool. All's good on that front. Like, Adams is having one of those experiences now, just before the Copa America instead of the World Cup. I mean, back spasms are something you can recover from between now and two months from now. So it's not without possibility that he is in that U.S. squad, but just something to watch for, as it seems like it always is with Tyler Adams.
All right. Can we take a little look around some quick hits on some U.S. players to catch up on? Flo Balogun, let's start there, Joe. 7 goals and 4 assists for Monaco this season. How are he getting on?
I think it's been a failure of a season for Florin Balogun at Monaco. You mentioned the goals numbers. He's only played about 1,400 minutes. It's not good enough, right? And I'm not saying that all of this is on Florin Balogun or all this is on Monaco. It's just been a bad situation for a player that I think is ready to try and take the next step in his career after being very good for Rem last year on loan from Arsenal. Now he gets this permanent big money move to Monaco. And frankly, he's just been unable to beat out Wissam Ben Yedder to claim that full starting spot up top. And now Monaco have gone with two forwards at times, so they played together, but it's not been a good year in terms of playing time. You look at efficiency, and those numbers aren't bad. Like, they're not mind-blowing numbers, but having 8 goals in about the minute tally that I mentioned is a fine season. You double that for like a full season's worth of work, and you're looking at a very productive striker for one of the best teams in France. But he just hasn't had the minutes. You know, we're still seeing him develop on the field, still trying to figure out exactly how and when to influence games off the ball, trying to become maybe a bit of a stronger presence in possession as well. All of that said, and Taylor, tell me if I'm crazy on this, I'm still not that concerned. Like, Ben Yedder's on the wrong side of 30. You can see the talent when you watch Balogun. Again, he's put up numbers in the minutes he's been on the field. He just hasn't quite played enough, and I would imagine, after all the money that Monaco spent on him, they are still very invested in his future and him being a part of the club as they continue to push and will be in the Champions League next season. So it's been a failure this year. With that being said, I'm not that worried as it relates to both his U.S. prospects this summer, where I think he will still be the clear starter, and as it relates to him being around and being a key role player for them next season.
I agree. I think he will be the starter for the United States. I still think we are in a situation in which he has to justify being that starter when he comes in. And I think there are games when, if he's not fully anonymous, he certainly doesn't elevate the U.S. performance. And I think that's a thing that maybe applies to this Monaco season as well. He is occasionally scoring goals. He is occasionally helping create opportunities. But there isn't the consistency, and there isn't sort of the individuality that maybe they were looking for. It sounds to me, this is largely cliffing from a Julien Laurent interview I was listening to, where he was basically saying that when you're playing for Reims, you maybe are allowed to do more, and there's less expectation of you need to do this in this specific situation, you need to be over here and doing this, and it's a little bit more like, get the ball and try to make something happen. And I think with Monaco, when he's being asked to do a number of different things all at once, it seems like it's been a fairly steep learning curve for him. And so I'm in the exact same position as Joe, basically, that I think with the amount of money they've spent, with the age of Ben Yedder, and the overall messaging being, we still believe in him, we still think he's a very important player in this team, and we look forward to his development. They'll be in the Champions League next year. I would assume that he will be a key part of that team. If in October he is still getting very limited minutes, then I have more concerns, because at that point it's become a couple seasons. You know, he's gotten 2 preseasons in there. He's very familiar with what the team is asking. And if he is still not the guy, then you might start to have some concerns about how much he's actually going to get in terms of playing time and if he ends up getting moved on. But for this summer, he's another one who I feel like you want to kind of give him the summer to build that confidence, to look good for the U.S., to prove that he should be the out-and-out starter for the United States in that spot. I still think he should be. I very much hope that he will justify that. And then he returns to Monaco, who continue to have the investment in him. So I think we'll continue to play him with just a little more confidence and a little more swagger. And hopefully that can help him kick on from where he was.
Taylor, I agree with literally every word you just said. The one thing that I want to add, because you mentioned that Balogun hasn't always looked productive or engaged with the U.S., and I don't disagree. I think the numbers bear a lot of that out.
I know, you said literally.
Yeah, well said. Like, you look back at those games, and you look back at the minutes, and you look back at how U.S. strikers have struggled, like, basically across the board for years now. This is not a Florin Balogun issue. This is, one, a personnel issue around whoever the number nine is for the U.S. It's a talent issue, and maybe it's a little bit of a system issue. And Gio Reyna is, let's face it, like, he is the guy who solves that problem for the U.S. We see Haji Wright come off the bench against Jamaica. Haji Wright, who was called in sort of last minute to that camp back in the Nations League after Josh Sargent has to withdraw. And Haji Wright scores two goals, and who's feeding him the ball? Who's drawing defenders in? Who's playing the ball in behind? It's Gio Reyna. Balogun, when Gio Reyna's been on the field with Florin Balogun, I think has looked excellent. When Gio Reyna has not been on the field with Florin Balogun, he looks like the player that you just described. That's the distinction. And I think it's a Balogun problem. I think it's an every striker in the U.S. pool problem. The thing that still makes me bullish on Balogun relative to the other strikers in the pool, you go and watch his tape. None of these other strikers create chances through the middle for themselves like Florin Balogun does. I've said this all the way along. It is still true when you watch him play with Monaco this year. He is a guy who can create a little bit of separation for himself inside the box with a chop, with a little touch with the outside of his foot, with something to freeze a defender and then give himself enough of a lane to get a shot off towards goal. Balogun does that in a way that no other U.S. number nines do. And I think ideally he would just have that player around him who can help unlock him, because the U.S. doesn't have a Harry Kane. The U.S. doesn't have a Karim Benzema. The U.S. doesn't have a player who can do it all, and you don't necessarily need someone to provide them service. That's not where the United States is right now.
It does sound like he is struggling to do that with Monaco this season, though, to create his own individual moments, to create better shooting opportunities. It does seem like the ones he's taking aren't particularly high percentage, and they're not him beating somebody on a dribble and then taking that shot. And that is something I would like to see more of. And I think maybe that... I think you're absolutely right with everything you said about the U.S. I think it's just also, if you're not doing it to the level that's expected at club, you're going to have like short confidence, and you're not going to be then trying to do as much with the U.S. or maybe looking as confident with the U.S. And so maybe you kind of just fall down a little bit in the intensity and the fit. And that's where, like, Joe, I think this is like an intangible thing that I know you don't always love going down this road, but there's almost a part of me that wants to see more of the Gio Reyna disposition from Florin Balogun. I kind of want to see him demanding things and being frustrated when a pass doesn't come. I think that's probably where some of this concern lies, is that I felt like in Balogun coming in, this wasn't the finished product. This wasn't Harry Kane or something like that, but it was a very exciting player who was playing at a high level, and it felt like could bring more knowledge, could bring just more ability. And when you're playing with somebody who has that extra ability, they do oftentimes elevate it because they're demanding, because they want, no, this pass needs to go here. Hey, like, this needs to be quicker. You just raise your game because the quality is better. And I think I was expecting more of that from him. And I think at times with the U.S., he's looked more passive and I think a little bit more willing to play the role and try to figure things out, and hasn't been that sort of main man that maybe I thought he would be. So maybe that's a me thing, and maybe that's a U.S. fan base thing. But I think that is something where I would like to see him just be a little bit more ruthless and look a little bit more ruthless for the United States. I think that might go some way towards making me feel like, yes, he is definitely that number nine for us, as opposed to he's still my number nine for now.
Joe, quick check-in with Chris Richards, coming back off an injury, played the last couple of games for Palace, seems to be part of Oliver Glasner's plans.
Yeah, which is an encouraging sign for Chris Richards, who hasn't really ever been in the plans at Crystal Palace. So this is a step forward. He's played about 1,700 minutes this year in the Premier League, which is more than any previous season in the top flight by basically 1,700 minutes. So progress. He's playing in the back three right now for Glasner, and seems like he will be something of a building block moving forward. I got really nothing but good things to say about Chris Richards, at least as it relates to his situation playing-wise and his spot in the squad in England right now.
Yeah, I was concerned a few weeks ago, not realizing that he had a hamstring injury. That's what kept him out. But he plays in their 5-2 win over West Ham. He plays in their 2-0 win over Newcastle, which is a pretty sizable win for them. Less so for my Alexander Isak to win the Golden Boot prediction. But still very excited to see him be a key part of that team, even if it's in a back three. I still think minutes for him and being valued by your manager goes a long way.
Yeah, and talk about minutes and value by your manager, Yunus Musa, who got to play in the Derby de la Madonnina earlier this week as we record, has logged a decent amount of minutes, Taylor, with Milan, perhaps overshadowed by another American on that roster, but still, Pioli still using him plenty.
Yes, that is just sort of the way things are right now with Yunus Musa. It's like, I mean, he's using him, right? There's that gif of Pioli keeping a very straight face and staring at Musa, and it goes on for a long time, and then he breaks into a smile and gives him a hug, and that feels sort of like what his season has been, of like, okay, I guess it's good. I guess everyone's happy. I am pleased with the way this year has gone for Yunus Musa. I think I had a huge amount of expectation for him. I think I put a huge amount of just like weight onto him as a key performer for the United States. I felt like he could do six different things for the United States whenever asked. And I think that's a lot to expect of a player who is still very young, still only 21 years old. And I think this move, I was very concerned about it at first. I think, you know, there's still reason to be concerned. It's only 1,200 minutes, only 10 starts, I think, on the season. But to move to a club like Milan, to still get minutes, to still get starts, to still seem to be in the manager's plans, I think it shows development, it shows progress. He's getting more starts very recently, at least. I think that's also a pretty good sign. So I think that's all you can ask for from a 21-year-old, is to make sure that you're kind of cementing your spot in that team or in the manager's estimations, and then hope that next season it will maintain or endure. And I guess you would hope the same thing goes for Pioli at Milan if you are Musa.
And Taylor, your thoughts on Musa and his trajectory with the US?
I'm still very excited for him. I think he's a player who I, as I said, had a huge amount of expectation for, and I think I continue to do. I think maybe unfairly, so that I thought he would be the out-and-out starter no matter what. But I think Joe has swayed me to the idea that if we're going to play Reyna Central, you are going to lose somebody in that midfield. And I think there it's just about having realistic expectations for what Musa can do at this point, and then enjoying the moments when he elevates the performance and recognizing that there is better to come as he develops more fully as a player. So I still look forward to him starting wherever that may be. I still look forward to him getting minutes for the United States. And I think long may his career endure.
Taylor, same question about USMNT trajectory, but for Leonard Maloney.
Yeah, I like Leonard Maloney. I read a profile of him. That's why we're talking about him. Because he is, a German-American, American airman father who met his German mother in Kenya, where she was a flight attendant, I believe. So there you go.
American, Taylor. He's got an F-150.
I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised if, like, he's got something that's very efficient and covers a lot of ground, because that is who Leonard Maloney is, playing in the heart of midfield for Heidenheim, currently seventh in the Bundesliga. Currently safe in the Bundesliga. He is seventh in the Bundesliga for high-intensity runs, Maloney. He's covered 191 miles this season as a defensive midfielder. Only 12 players in the league have run more than he. So he seems like a player who ticks a lot of boxes in USMNTs of days gone by. When the U.S. was maybe about heart and fight and intensity, he would definitely be starting for the United States. I was saying in the pre-show, he is sort of a representation of how the U.S. program has evolved in a very positive way, that I think in the past, if we had an American starting for a mid-table Bundesliga club in their midfield, he would be on the roster. He would be a very exciting player. Here, he might be surplus to requirement because he's not particularly good when it comes to any of his passing numbers, unfortunately, which sounds very harsh. But if you look at the data, it's not great when it comes to passing accuracy. It's not great when it comes to number of passes attempted or completed, long passes, like dangerous passes, creative passes. That's not really his game. It seems to be a lot of hard work, hard running, winning the ball, organizing the defense. Can pass, but it's a lot of short sort of recycled passes. So I think he's a player that makes sense if you need depth in the midfield. I think he makes a lot of sense for the Olympic team to see how he does at that level as an overage player. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he does get maybe some looks from Greg Berhalter. And if he were called into Copa America camp, I'm not fully surprised there either. I think it would be very much as a depth option and would probably require other players to be injured or not fully ready to go. But I still think it's a player that is exciting for what he has done, for his past inclusion in the USMNT, And then the idea that he isn't included is still somewhat heartening, weirdly, but I hope he is because he just seems like a very nice guy who very much wants to play for the U.S. and says if he were called to play in the Copa America, they wouldn't need to pay for his flight because he would run there. So that's the kind of mentality I want. That's what Nemanja Vidic said about playing for Manchester United, and it has forever endeared him into my heart.
He'd run across the ocean, was that?
Yeah, we don't need to worry about logistics, Ryan. Don't worry about that. Worry about that.
I do love his name, though, Leonard Maloney. It does feel very 1940s, that name. It feels like he knows how to start a propeller plane. Yeah, he doesn't need to run.
Yeah. Yes, yes. He should be wearing a fedora and smoking a cigarette. Yes.
Exactly that. Joe, we go now to a section called Players We Think Need a New Club This Summer. Do you have any nominees for this section, sir?
Yeah, I've got a few nominees, at least ones that I think should be looking around, right? Maybe take a peek, see what happens, see what's out there. The first one is Matt Turner. Hasn't played a game since February 28th for Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest is a mess. My thought is, if there's a player who does need a move, Turner's probably at the top of that list. Maybe check around, see if there's another team in the Premier League who wants you. I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen as high as I am on Matt Turner. Maybe you go and see if Germany has any open spots in the Bundesliga because, let's face it, a lot of USMNT players have had success there. It feels like a market that is more open to Americans than a lot of other top leagues in Europe. I'm not opposed to him coming back to Major League Soccer either. I don't know how likely that is, but I would imagine MLS teams are watching that situation with very great interest. And if you're Matt Turner and you want to make sure you're in a spot where you can play ahead of 2026, it's not the worst idea to go out there and do that. But if you're Turner, I think you're keeping your options very much open right now, because this four situation has been an absolute nightmare.
Joe, would you rather he go to a club where they are going to continue to ask him to develop his distribution, passing ability, foot skills? Okay,
yeah.
So you'd rather he's just basically playing and saving goals?
I would love him to be playing at as high of a level as possible. And obviously that would not include Major League Soccer at the top of that list. Maybe that is the best option for him. I don't know what that's going to look like. But yeah, I think Matt Turner's distribution probably hit a soft cap like 5 years ago, 4 years ago now.
Would you rather MLS or the championship?
I'd rather MLS.
Or AFC Wimbledon. We'd have him. Sorry,
for Ryan's sake, AFC Wimbledon. Ryan, just for you. Just for you, bud. I'd rather MLS just out of pure selfish reasons, because I would be able to watch him more often and more easily. I don't think the championship would be a bad move, but I don't think it's dramatically above where you'd be if you were in Major League Soccer.
I think he's very fortunate that no one in the USMNT pool is close to being able to challenge him. It is such a huge gap that I think it is about just finding a place where he can get minutes and continue to be Matt Turner and do what Matt Turner does. But, you know, 2026 is not that far away. So if he is still stuck on the bench for Nottingham Forest all of next season, that does allow others to close that gap and theoretically catch up. Not sure who those others would be, but we'll keep an eye on it. But yeah, I think Turner is one I definitely hope gets a move this summer, especially with Forest reinforcing in January. It feels like something that could very much happen.
I look forward to the tweets when he leaves, because their tweets are appointment viewing at the moment. Nottingham Forest, we shall see. Taylor, anyone else you put in this column of needing a new club over the summer?
Yes, I think so. I think Gio Reyna would be in there. He started for Nottingham Forest in their loss to Everton this weekend. He comes off in the 53rd, does not have the best of marks for that one. I think if Nottingham Forest stay up, and if Nuno wants him and sees a role for him, be it as a starter or as a substitute, I'm not wholly opposed to him staying at Forest. At least it's a place where he is then valued, has the backing of the manager, and feels like he'll get opportunities. I have a feeling he goes back to Dortmund this summer, and I'm starting to feel like there's a chance that he stays at Dortmund this summer, which is not a thing I fully expected. But if, to my understanding, if Dortmund don't renew Marco Reus, then basically they have a depth bench spot for who starts if Julian Brandt can't go or needs someone to replace him, and that could well be Gio Reyna. So I won't be surprised if he stays at Forest. I won't be surprised if he stays at Dortmund, and I also won't be surprised if he's sold on by Dortmund, because he does seem like a player who could still get a little bit of a fee. I'm not sure that is fully the case for Matt Turner at this point, but for Reyna, I think there could be some fee for Dortmund. I also think there could be some value in him staying at Dortmund. So a lot of possibility, and I'm not really opposed to any of the potential options.
There you go. You're unsurprised. You're a difficult man to surprise, frankly, so, by the sound of it.
Okay, I got one. I'm surprised it hasn't gone better for Tim Weah. That felt like a move that would if not work right away, would be one where we would see him start to get minutes and sort of endear himself the way Weston McKennie has. And I don't think that has been the case. It doesn't seem like Allegri knows how he wants to use him or how to get the best out of him. And I don't think if Thiago Motta comes in, he's going to see him as, yep, that's my starting right back next season for sure. If anything, I think there are rumblings that Juve might be looking to bring in Thiago Santos, the Lille fullback. So they're replacing a Lille player with a Lille player to be their potential fullback. And I think that further closes the door for Tim Weah. So he is one who, though I thought that move could be really exciting and might end up working, it does not feel like it's going to. He might be on the way out. Maybe it's a loan this summer. I wouldn't hate that.
He got the assist that put Juve into the Coppa Italia final this week. I hope he doesn't lose his
That changes spot. Everything.
Yeah. That's all we got to know. All right, Joe, we do need to take a quick break, but real quick, any other noms for players who need a new club this summer?
Yeah, BA, Brendan Aaronson, maybe on this list somewhere. He's on loan at Union Berlin from Leeds United. Maybe try again at Leeds. Otherwise, take a look in the Bundesliga. Maybe it's staying on with Union Berlin permanently. Aaronson's in a bit of a rough patch in his career right now. Things have looked up a bit as the season's gone on in the Bundesliga. I'm not sure Leeds United is the spot for him to be going forward, even as they push for promotion to the Premier League. I think that chapter might have closed and Germany might be the spot for him, but we'll see.
All right, we'll take a quick pause up. When we come back, we've been flirting around the idea of our rosters or ideas of how the Copa America roster is going to shape up. We're going to dig into that a bit more after this break.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Hey folks, this is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Taylor, let's talk Copa America roster, shall we? Let's just get down to brass tacks right now. We, as I mentioned, we've sort of been piecing it together through this episode, but do you have an idea of your locks for the roster, locks even for the starting positions? How are you feeling about that team right now?
I'm mostly pretty good. I think the injuries that we've talked about, the Dest one obviously is a pretty big blow. the continued concern I have about Tyler Adams continues, so that doesn't make me feel great. But as we've talked it out, like, I think I still have a good amount of faith in Florin Balogun to be a key player for the United States, to be that starting number nine. I think it's going to be Pulisic on the left. It's either going to be Weah as a right winger or as the right back, probably on the right wing with Joe Scally behind. I think Joe laid that out pretty well. Midfield, my guess would be that it's Reyna, McKinney, and Adams if he's good to go, with Musa subbing in. Matt Turner will be the starting goalkeeper. Probably Chris Richards, Miles Robinson, Tim Ream, two of the three there. Jedi Robinson on the left. We talked about Joe Scally on the right. So I do think it's still a lot of known quantities, and a lot of players that we would expect to be there will be there. There are still the depth concerns. There are still the potential starting concerns with a few of those spots. But I have a mostly settled squad, I think. Joe, does that line up with where you are?
Yeah, I've got a pretty darn settled squad. The Weah right back situation, just depending on how inquisitive Greg Berhalter is feeling when he drops this roster, that does change a few things, and I think opens up a slot in the attack, obviously, if Weah is being thought of as more of a right back. We don't have any real evidence to prove that that's the case, as discussed earlier on. So there's a lot of things that just sort of fit here. But some of my questions are, okay, well, if Weah is still a winger and you bring Scally as a starting right back, who is his backup? Because I don't think anybody really has a great feel for that. Do you bring DeAndre Yedlin back from the ashes? Do you go and add Brian Reynolds? I don't know that I have a strong feeling about any of it, to be quite honest, but there's an open spot there. If you move Weah back and you think of him more as a fullback, well, then who's the extra winger that you're bringing on in his place? Brendan Aaronson very clearly is not in the first team picture at this point, but he was brought in last camp as an injury replacement to Luca De La Torre. So maybe we see Brendan Aaronson back in this team. There are questions there. I have questions about the third goalkeeper, the position that matters the least in this team. Mm-hmm. And then I also have questions surrounding the number nine position. I posed that question to you earlier, Taylor. If the Olympics weren't happening this summer, I would not have questions, and I would bring Balogun, and I would bring Ricardo Pepi, and I would probably bring Haji Wright as a winger, third striker, if you need him. But with the Olympics, I went the other way from you, Taylor. And I said, yeah, let's go get Pepi as much time in the shop window as possible. Let's go get him over. And the shop window might just be like PSV buying more Ricardo Pepi stock and them giving him more minutes in 2024. Or it might be, hey, you know, we're going to give you a loan to a really, really good team somewhere else where we believe you can play, and we'll bring you back in when Luke De Jong's ready to hang up his boots. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I've got Sargent and Balogun as my two strikers, with Haji Wright sort of as a pseudo winger striker kind of player. It would not surprise me at all if Pepi goes to the Olympics, because he is Olympic eligible. It also wouldn't shock me if Berhalter just keeps with his best guys for the Copa America and says, hey, we rate Pepi more than Sargent. So we'll see.
If he were to bring all four, does that basically just mean he has no idea? Like, if you have Pepi, Sargent, Wright, and Balogun, that's too much, right? That's basically avoiding a difficult decision.
Yeah, I don't even know how to answer the first question there, Taylor, because I just think there's a negative percent chance that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he could bring them all into those pre-Copa friendlies, right? You've got Brazil, you've got Colombia in early mid-June. Like, maybe that's a wiggle room path here, and then you send somebody home. But you can't, in good conscience, bring four strikers to a 23-player squad.
No, you can't. And so I think, Joe, though I said earlier I would have Pepi in the Copa America team, here's what I would say. If you're not, I need Berhalter to be a very good communicator here, because we've seen with the U.S., as we've already talked about with PSV, Pepi and his agent are not shy about talking about feeling left out, feeling not included, feeling frustrated by coaching decisions. And I would prefer there not be more drama here, especially for a player that I think can have a long history with the United States and a long successful history at that. So if he goes to Copa America, Ricardo Pepi, and is, though still an age-eligible player, a key performer for that team, and there's an explanation of, we want to see what happens with you as the starter, with you as the guy leading that line, with you being the main man, we can't offer you that with the Copa America, we can offer you that with the Olympics. I don't hate that, especially because we had this question in the Discord when we talked about rosters in the past, of like, if you're not going to call Josh Sargent up now, when are you going to call him up? If you're not going to call Haji Wright up after this season and what he's done with the U.S. more recently, when are you going to call him up? And I think of the ones that we're talking about, I don't think you're going to drop Balogun. So it does feel like Pepi is the one who has done the least this season. Yep,
certainly.
It's a competition between him and Balogun, but we've talked about Balogun plenty.
No, it's Pepe for sure.
Exactly. So that does then mean he is probably the one you would leave off, and maybe the Olympics does allow you to cover your bases a little bit if you do a good job of explaining things and communicating. Because I do think there's also a possibility that bridges get burned here this summer if things aren't handled well.
Yeah, and just one thing quickly on that. I guess I bristle a little bit at some of the sentiment there. Like, it is Greg Berhalter's job to communicate and keep relationships open with his players. It is not Greg Berhalter's job to coddle these players. Like, Ricardo Pepi, you haven't been playing this year. And I want to preface this by saying I think Ricardo Pepi is a good soccer player who can help the U.S. in various ways. Like, just because he left him off the World Cup squad, and I don't know that that was a great decision. I don't feel particularly strongly about it. Let's be honest, none of those strikers were going to change games to the U.S., including Ricardo Pepi. Just because Pepe's been angry about that stuff before, and I've talked to Ricardo Pepi, and he's saying all the right things publicly. He said the right things publicly to me. But hey, you know, like, we're going to keep moving forward, all that jazz. Like, it's not Berhalter's job to say, oh man, I don't want Pepi to be angry about things and talk about me in the media. No, like, if that's how he's making decisions, he should not be in this role. Like, that's where I draw that line. And as far as the Sargent and Haji Wright thing, like, if they're not absolutely demanding to be called up, and I don't think you can argue that good but not great seasons in the championship is good enough to demand being called up to the U.S. men's national team, like, then I'm not sure I'd frame it as, like, oh, well, if we don't call him up now, when are we going to call him up? Well, maybe they just don't ever, like, truly need to be called up in the first place. I do think we will see one or both of those players, or two of these players, if you wrote Pepe into the equation, at the Copa America. But it should be for the soccer reasons, and because they're, like, banging down the door on to be called up, not because maybe you're concerned about public perception or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and maybe I spoke ineloquently. That's a fair accusation to make. I think with Pepe, though, I think there is an obligation as the national team manager to make sure that everyone feels like the door is open. And Ricardo Pepe is one who already has spoken about how he felt like the door was closed to him, and in his opinion, unfairly closed. I hear what you're saying, that you can't coddle these players, but I think it does require good communication and an arm-around-the-shoulder approach, in my opinion. And I think at a time when a player is already feeling like they're not really valued by the club and there's justifiable reasons for that, it's a somewhat similar situation with the U.S. And I just think it's important, if you're Berhalter, to not just, like, develop the best team, but I think develop the best possible group of players so that you have different options at your disposal. And so you're right. Don't coddle him. But I think also explaining things and making sure that there aren't those miscommunications and there isn't that feeling of frustration. A player's going to be mad when they're left off. No player wants to be subbed out. No player wants to be sat on the bench. But I think you can still manage the expectation and manage the hurt of that a little bit.
All right, there we go. Final
Joe
question.
Joe hates feelings is what I'm hearing.
Correct.
Well, yeah, and the role of coaches in general.
Of course.
Which is canon by this point. Joe, final question from me, sir. Looking at the betting odds for the Copa America, Argentina obviously favourites, then we've got Brazil, Uruguay, Colombia, then both Mexico and the USA on plus 1,400 or thereabouts at this point. That puts the US as a quarterfinal team. Does that feel right to you?
Yep. I think the most likely outcome for the U.S. is that they lose to Brazil in the quarters. And the reason why they're level on odds with Mexico is that even though the U.S. has dominated Mexico in recent meetings, Mexico are on the easy side of the bracket. The U.S. have a much more difficult side of the bracket with Uruguay and Brazil and Colombia all over there. Mexico's side is not quite so difficult. Not that it's a cakewalk, but that's why those odds have them where they do. And I think anybody looking at this tournament and looking at the bracket path for the U.S., sees them probably getting bounced by Brazil. It's not impossible for them to move forward, but it feels pretty chalky in that the path is there for the U.S. to meet a giant in the quarters and to be sent packing.
Yeah. T, that feel right?
Yeah, I think so. This is going to sound ludicrous. Whenever we try to do, like, the kind of bracketology, this is going to go to chalk for sure. It does seem like the most logical one would be Brazil versus the United States. I'll just say Brazil aren't always that convincing of late.
No, they've had
some problems. They've only beaten one very mediocre national team in their last five games. I think it's England is their name.
It's not important.
And to be fair, they beat England. They drew with Spain. Those are two pretty good results in friendlies. But
yeah,
in qualification, lost to Uruguay, lost to Colombia, lost to Argentina. Again, very good teams, but there's a vulnerability there that if Brazil aren't sort of locked in, aren't fully ready, don't have their full squad or have some injuries, We'll see who the United States plays in that knockout round if both advance. But I still think Brazil are Brazil, and they're very, very good. So I think if you lose to Brazil and you acquit yourself adequately, then I'm less frustrated by that. But I'm just very excited for all of the possible iterations of this Copa America.
It is crazy how one-sided this bracket is.
Yeah.
So the group distribution, like, it's going to be Group C, which is the U.S.'s group, up against Group D on one half of the bracket as you enter the knockout rounds, and then obviously Group A and B on the other side. In Group C and D, you have the United States, you have Uruguay, you have Brazil, and you have Colombia. The U.S. probably the bottom of those teams, maybe pushing with Colombia, Uruguay, hard to say. On the other side, it's Argentina, and it's Ecuador. That's the top team in Group D. It's a little hard to say. Argentina is in Group A with Peru, Chile, and Canada. Not exactly strong fare there. And then Group B, you've got Mexico, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Jamaica. Like, Mexico basically gifted a spot into the quarterfinals, and maybe even the top spot. Ecuador are a better team than Mexico right now. But man, it is wild to me how much more difficult the U.S.'s side of this bracket is to the alternate side.
And to be fair, if the United States, as you laid out there, Joe, if Brazil weren't to finish top, then very likely we're playing Colombia. And I'm not sure that's fully better either for the United States. It's going to be rough. The United States also has a friendly against Brazil before Copa America begins. Yeah, that's true. Joe, if you had to bet, is that the, like, U.S. gets trounced by Brazil in the friendly and we're all very concerned about Copa America? Or is it the United States beats Brazil and we're like, oh, we got this. And then we get trounced in the quarterfinals?
Of those two options, and only those two, the first one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There we go. Joe, it's also, like you said, the big, like, one of the roster spots you have open or you have a question mark around is third choice goalkeeper, correct?
Yes.
I think if I lay out my roster, I have like three question marks not written in ink players, and those would be the third choice goalkeeper, the backup right back, and one of the depth center back options. Is that... mostly where you are? I think maybe there's some flexibility in the midfield. Like, if you're bringing in Luca Della Torre, are you bringing in Tillman? Are you bringing in Johnny Cardoso? I think you're probably only bringing in two of those three. But for the most part, it does feel somewhat settled, especially if it's only 23 players.
Yeah, I think the midfield is settled, and I would have Della Torre, Tillman, Musa, McKennie, Johnny, and Adams. I'd bring all those guys with Gio Reyna as well. I think the center backs are actually settled as well, with CCV, Robinson, Ream, and Richards as those four. For me, it's the third string. It wasn't
CCV for the Nations League, right?
There was reporting about, and Berhalter even said, like, there were some fitness concerns with Celtic. We wanted to leave him home, but it very much sounded to me like he was in that squad, cool. And I think he should be. It's the third choice goalkeeper, which, again, don't care about whatsoever. It's the right back situation, and it's like the front line. If you move way back, do you bring an extra winger? Is Haji Wright that extra winger? Who's the backup striker? If it is Haji Wright, if it's not Haji Wright, it's the attack, and it's the third choice goalkeeper and the right back.
Do you see, like, is there logic in not calling in an MLS goalkeeper to be that third choice goalkeeper? Like, it's the most likely thing is like Callender or Sean Johnson or somebody else. But at the same time, MLS is going to continue to play. So you're basically taking a goalkeeper away from their team for a month to not have them play for the national team. I do wonder if there's any logic in calling in anybody from Europe. Maybe that's Gago Slonina to get him some experience, and then you send him to the Olympics to be a starter. That's the only other thing that's tripping me up, because otherwise I would assume it's just going to be, and I don't mean that in a negative way, just I would assume it's going to be an MLS goalkeeper, because there's not a ton of obvious options otherwise.
Yeah, it was Callender back, March. Yeah, it was Callender in March. So we'll see what happens there. I think if you're whatever MLS team the goalkeeper's getting picked from, you would very much prefer it to be Gago Slonina.
Wonderful stuff. All right, that is the USMNT update for now. Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much for updates and provisions in this here audio recording.
Thank you, my friend. It's been very fun.
It has indeed. Joe Lowry, thank you very much, sir.
Ah, thank you, Ryan.
And thank you, listener, the mostest. We'll be back on the feed very shortly, but for now, bye!